This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'd like now to welcome Carol Farkas, Robin Williams, and Kristen Bundeson from the International Shakespeare Center of Santa Fe. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Who knew there was such a thing? Is this a new center, the International Shakespeare Center?
It is new. It came together last August, but it's been based on some activities that have been going on for quite some time. It's just that we coalesced at the end of the summer into a more formal organization. But we incorporate and we work with so many different groups, a youth Shakespeare group, the Upstart Crows of Santa Fe, the Santa Fe Close Readers group that Robin's been running for several years, which is the most active close reading Shakespeare group in the country, is right here in Santa Fe.
Oh my goodness.
All sorts of other activities happening, but part of the inspiration came from Robin and I working with the Museum of Art downtown on an application to bring a copy of Shakespeare's first folio, which is the collection of Shakespeare's plays. It was printed in 1623. 2016 is the 400th anniversary of the death of William Shakespeare. So there's activities going on around the globe. And part of that application process, it was very competitive. So the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C., with support from the National Endowment for the Humanities, is offering to send one folio to every state in the nation.
Oh my
and
goodness,
Puerto Rico
great.
To celebrate. When I was visiting the Folger in August, I met with some of the staff, and they said we had the most competitive and robust application in the nation.
Oh my goodness.
I know, it was really wonderful.
Go Santa Fe.
Go. And so that sort of pushed us forward into all sorts of wonderful activities.
So when a folio, the first folio of William Shakespeare, comes to a museum, first of all, we don't even want to talk about the amount of security and safety and
exactly.
insurance that goes on around this.
That was part of the application.
Yeah.
They had to prove that they could do that.
Right. But then it's there. Nobody's going to be able to touch it. So what are we going to look at?
It's open to Hamlet's speech, to be or not to be.
Okay.
So that's what you get to see. It is kind of an odd thing. You go and you look and you say, Which is why we're doing several activities around that. I'm doing a two-hour talk about what does to be or not to be even mean? What is it talking about? What's a fartle? What's a bodkin? Is it death? Is it suicide? Is it murdering somebody? So that at least when you go see it, I just gave a talk to the docents at the Museum of Art about how do you make a book in 1623? What was, you know, all the process of paper and ink and printing? So that they at least know what it took to get a book that big, especially in print. Kristen's doing a talk about what is the first folio and why do we care? It's a $6 million book, so that alone is worth going to look
and
at.
And Upstart Crows of Santa Fe will be at the museum doing pop-up Shakespeare performances.
Meaning you'll just be innocently walking along and suddenly there will be a Shakespeare performance in your face?
Well, there will be all sorts of things going on there. It's on Valentine's Day, and we're one of the groups that are performing there that day. So there will be opportunities to not only watch that, but to get involved.
Okay.
And the Folger's providing six large panels with information.
Yeah, they're providing sort of a complete exhibit room experience for people who may not know it, but the word folio, it refers to the size of the paper, which is quite large. But folio is also a term used to refer to religious texts and reference texts. And Shakespeare geeks would consider the first folio to be both a reference and a religious text, a sacred text.
Right.
So there's a dual meaning.
How does it work for you guys? Is Shakespeare your religion?
No. Well, you know, there is a thin line between religion and theater. And for the Greeks, if you go back to the Greeks, it was practically identical.
And Shakespeare has been deified.
Well, he has been deified, but I think the writing is so deeply human, and it gives us access to understanding ourselves on so many levels. And maybe that is why people look at it as something sacred.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that we're religious. We're very geeky. I'm very
geeky.
That's
a better word, yes.
But my focus is really on people who don't like Shakespeare. Those are the people I like to chat with and
oh, so you're the one who does the conversions.
Yes, but I'm very protestant. We can go straight to... That's a long thing about what a lot of my study was, how Shakespeare got taken into the university and away from the coal miners and the shopkeepers, and Shakespeare got taken into performance specifically and away from the rest of us. So today we have these priests, the actors, and the scholars, and we have been told for 50, 75 years, we must go through these priests to get to Shakespeare. We are Protestants. We can go straight to the book itself. We can do it without scholars, without actors. I mean, of course, the scholars and actors have a lot to offer, but don't limit me to only that avenue into Shakespeare. Let me get in there myself, and that's my whole push.
You know, it's interesting because I think part of what happened between then and now, you know, the centuries go by and the language changes. And so you read Shakespeare, and if you had been a Mason or whatever in the 1600s, you would have understood it. And now you don't understand half the words.
I would disagree. It's not.
I'm speaking personally. I remember reading Shakespeare in high school and having to look up every fourth word. And it's still that way.
I would disagree that you can get a lot even if you don't know what some of the words mean. And the words that we don't know are actually less trouble than the words we think we know. Like you say, what's a fartle? So you look up what a fartle is. But if it says meet or want or subtle, we think we know what it means, but actually that word has changed. But regardless, there's still so much you can get out of it. And my whole thing is reading out loud in community, reading out loud with other people, and you stop after every couple of sentences and say, what does that mean? And then you should see one of the Sunday morning readings. It's so wonderful how some people who've hardly ever read books before are going, oh my gosh, why did he do this? What's this going on? How did that happen? I think he's doing this. And Shakespeare is so ambiguous that it just leads to all these amazing discussions about the possibilities.
It's very interesting because that's not something you would do during a play. You take in the play.
Mm-hmm. You're a passive.
As an audience member, and the drama and the staging and the kind of multi-sensory experience of it. But in a close reading group, you can stop and talk.
Right.
Now, this is something that people can... Is this a public thing?
Yeah,
oh,
public.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's on meetup.com. Uh-huh. You can just Google or go to the meetup.com site and put in Shakespeare in Santa Fe, and you'll find us really quickly. And all the details are there. And there's two groups every Sunday, two public groups every Sunday, and we meet on the campus of Santa Fe University of Art and Design.
We had to split into two groups because we couldn't fit. There were over 40 people.
In each session. So.
And you guys kind of lead or facilitate these groups?
Robin's the host, and I back her up along with some other people. And Carol's an eager and active participant. So it is, I think that more people get turned off of Shakespeare by bad high school experiences than need to be.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of success working with developmental learners at the college level. Using Shakespeare as their avenue into highly successful academic skills. And there's nothing quite like watching somebody who's been told they're stupid find out every possible meaning of six lines of The Taming of the Shrew and going, oh my God, I can do anything, bring me Joyce. You know, they just sort of, then suddenly they realize they're not stupid because they've conquered six lines of Shakespeare, and they just go off to the races.
And it's not a class. It's
The Sunday group.
Read, yeah, the Sunday group. We read a few lines. We stop and I say, "What do you think? What was he saying? What is he talking about?" And so everybody participates. I have a special penchant for words and what they mean, and so I might throw in differences in the words. But otherwise, it's a group discussion about the remarkable text and the layers.
This is where Robin and I really connected about the accessibility of Shakespeare, because my experiences was working with young people. My daughter Anna has Upstart Crows of Santa Fe, which is a group for kids aged 10 to 18.
Yeah, we had her on the air recently.
Right. And I've been working with kids on Shakespeare for over a decade. Invariably, once they start getting into the language, they come to you and say, "Why don't we talk like this anymore?"
Really?
Really. That is consistent.
Because it's so...
It's so rich.
Useful and rich, and there's a word for everything.
And when you encounter the language, it's not just that the words are different or that they're older, but there's a rhythm, and there's the rhetoric, and there's the sound of it. We had a family come from Denmark to see one of their relatives in a show. The kids didn't understand a word of English, but they felt the language. So Shakespeare gets to you on so many different levels.
Robin did a workshop with the Upstart Crows and included a lot of rhetoric, and I went to their final meeting and they were jumping up and down and going, "This is Stichomythia, this is
Antanaglossus,
and these are, you know, junior high and high school kids who are just totally taken with rhetorical devices now, which used to be part of the standard language education.
You know, rhetorical devices and logical fallacies are things that really should be taught in school all
yes,
the time.
Yes, logical fallacies.
There's not a day that goes by where I don't hear some logical fallacy and want to point it out. Ladies and gentlemen, if there's anybody out there in radio land who wants to help do a radio program on logical fallacies, please write to radiocafe@ksfr.org. I'm not kidding. It's something we want to work on. So anyway, we're talking to Carol, Robin, and Kristen from the International Shakespeare Center. So we are talking about, okay, in February in the new year, this first folio is going to be coming to Santa Fe. And you, ladies and gentlemen, can go look at the page open to be or not to be and go to all kinds of lectures. Now, what's sort of the next step? What are your hopes for the International Shakespeare Center here in this town, which is known for a lot of things that are not theater?
Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think one of the most exciting things that happened as these events were being planned is we were inspired to get in touch with the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art, and they were excited to talk to us because, as it turned out, they were interested in having more of a presence in the States to support their graduates here. So the idea of coming and doing workshops was the best thing they could have heard at that moment. We got them signed up, and the principal of Lambda said, if only there were some people there who've been through this training, who could demonstrate some of this. And
now, which training are we talking about?
At the London Academy.
The London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts, which is one of the world's preeminent theater training conservatories.
So we're talking about being trained as an actor, and a Shakespearean actor.
And just so we can sort of connect to it, Benedict Cumberbatch is an alumni, John Lithgow is an alumni.
David Suchet.
Brian Cox. Probably 20% of the cast of Game of Thrones are all London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts, which is called Lambda, alum. So that's pretty impressive.
Right, and they have a text-based approach to performance, so that, you know, there's the method. Actors try to figure out what a character's background is. You know, why is Othello the way he is? It was his mother. And then there's a way to approach Shakespeare, which is by going deeply into the text. What is the rhetoric telling us? What is the verse telling us? And that's the approach that Lambda takes. And
what is Shakespeare telling us?
And what is Shakespeare telling us? And because we're so interested in that, it seemed a natural fit. So having some Lambda-trained actors here to work with the people doing workshops from London, was something they wanted to have happen, and we were able to call Duc Dame Ensemble in New York through a friend of mine who is their director. They just won Best Director for the New York City Fringe for a 17th century Spanish play. We got rave reviews, Fuente Ovejuna. And they got so excited about this that they said, well, we don't want to just send three of us out. We all want to come out. Can we all come out and perform? And
15 said, of them.
That would be fine. Yeah,
the so entire troupe.
They're all coming out.
When are they coming out?
They will be February. Here in February. They'll be doing a show, Women from Shakespeare's History. So it'll be scenes from Richard III and King John, and specifically scenes involving the women from those plays. So that will be on February 17th.
And we'll remind people when it comes closer to the time.
Yes.
Now, what about homegrown Shakespeare performances here in Santa Fe? Is that part of your vision?
It absolutely, absolutely is, yeah. Our director's cuts show, themed Speak the Speech, is featuring 10-minute scenes from all the directors in town that we reached out to everybody, and 11 have agreed to participate. And they are choosing scenes from whatever play they want and presenting scenes with the actors of their choice that illustrate their approach to the text. How does their directorial vision approach Shakespeare's language? So that will be on...
It will be in February.
February 20th.
Everything's in February.
And that'll be right at the Museum of Art where the Folio is, which I think is...
In St. Francis Auditorium.
Okay.
It was really important for us to include and acknowledge how much is going on in Santa Fe in terms of theater. But there's been some struggles in trying to really elevate theater in Santa Fe, but Santa Fe is a cultural destination for so many things.
But not theater.
But it is now, because there's the International Shakespeare Center.
We have great local theater.
Yeah, we do.
We have great local theater, but for some reason it's always been struggling. And so what we're hoping is that if we can pull together what we are hoping to in the future, that it will... When somebody comes to see Shakespeare, they want to see everything else that's in town. So it will provide a bigger audience for our local theater, which is excellent.
Now, a friend of mine goes every year, I think it's to Oregon, to
Ashland.
Shakespeare,
Ashland, right.
To a festival there. Are you hoping for something like that, like an annual festival that's a destination?
Now, Oregon is a town of 20,000, 4 hours from the nearest major airport. There's nothing to do there, and they sell 400,000 tickets a year in three theaters in this little tiny town. We thought if they can do that. Stratford, Ontario is a small town.
Utah.
Lenox, Massachusetts, Utah, Cedar City, Utah.
Stratford, Ontario.
Yeah.
Canada, yeah.
They so actually if the name of your town is Stratford, you have a Shakespeare festival there?
That's exactly what happened. They said, we're named Stratford. Let's have a Shakespeare
festival.
Spill
the theater.
All right.
Yeah.
And when you go to their site, one of the fun things when I was doing some research, it's so remote that the way they sell their market their theater is they say, your weekend will start when the bus picks you up and drives you 3 hours to Stratford, and then you're going to see three plays.
Right.
So, and Santa Fe, of course, has got a much more robust
It's already an artist destination.
We're already an artist destination. But and one of the first things we did is we reached out to all those American-based festivals, and we also reached out to the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust in Stratford-upon-Avon in England and introduced ourselves and said, hi, new kid on the block, you know, really admire, you know, how successful you've been. Or, for example, Shakespeare Birthplace Trust in England does an excellent schools program, reaching out to the schools. And every single person wrote back saying, hey, great. We're so happy. When we're in Santa Fe, we're going to call on you. Or if you come to, you know, any one of those destinations, let us know. We'll meet. So that there's this camaraderie amongst all of the different festivals and organizations. Our activities aren't just performance focused. So we're more than a festival. A festival is generally performance focused because we are also interested in the close reading. Robin's research for her doctorate really focuses on the more people who read the text, the better the audience, the more tickets you can sell, the more engaged the audience is.
Reading out loud in community.
Yes. Right. So, right, not home alone and getting lost on your own. So there's the reading, there's the research, there's kids, there's seniors, there's performance, there's education and training, so that there's this really rounded approach.
A year-round approach. I mean, all the places we were just mentioning have a repertory season, and it starts and then it's over. But what we're talking about would be going on year-round.
But, I mean, will there be, like, a week or two or three
There will
weeks
be a repertory season, yes. And probably with Duc Dame Ensemble, and bringing in directors of note, and then
training,
working with local artists.
We have a number of local actors who would probably love to be professionally trained and taken. I mean, a lot of them are professionally trained, but go to the next level in specifically Shakespeare. So it's not that we're not bringing in outsiders because we don't have enough, but we are bringing in some outsiders to train ones we have into a higher level.
And to train more.
And to
train offer
more,
this
yes.
world-class training without leaving town, without having to go someplace else.
So the International Shakespeare Center, I wanted to ask each of you how you, I mean, you use the word geek. Two of you, I think, have PhDs, Shakespeare scholars. Serious life commitment. What drew you in the first place? How did you get into all this? How did Shakespeare seduce you?
Well, I'll jump in. Because like you, I was not a Shakespeare geek to start with. When I came out of high school, I wasn't very impressed with my high school experience at Shakespeare. And I loved theater, but I didn't go see Shakespeare until I went with my 5-year-old to a production of Measure for Measure performed by kids aged 6 to 18. In Madison, Wisconsin, and it was evening, and I didn't know what this was going to be like, but by the intermission, I was completely riveted. Here were these kids, some of them under 10, speaking the text understandingly. In the back of the room, there's a whole bunch of other kids who are doing the sort of tech for the show, and they're laughing at all the Shakespearean jokes, and I'm thinking, this is amazing. And I thought, well, I better take my 5-year-old home now because it's bedtime. And she said, no, don't make me go. I need to know what happens to Isabella. And I said, do you understand this? And she said, well, I don't understand it. And she pointed to her ears, but I understand it in here. And she tapped her forehead. And I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, this is a powerful thing.
This is the one who's directing now.
This is the one who's directing
Shakespeare.
Now. Right. So by the time she was 6, she was a member of the company. And 40 productions later, I had completely drunk the Kool-Aid.
Oh, my goodness. Age 6. What did she play at the age of 6?
At the age of 6, she was third witch and Scottish doctor. But by the time she was 11, she was playing Lady Macbeth, which is really something to see. About 5 or 6 years into that, I began helping out of the theater, and the next thing I knew, I was directing, and I'd absorbed their method, which was immersion. It was immersion. It wasn't a theater company. It was a place where you got deeply into the language, understood it, and then the kids just ran with that. So it was very inspiring, and that's how I got involved.
Wow. Talk about a moment that, an evening that changes your life.
Absolutely.
What about you, Kristen?
My first degree's in theater and dance, so when I was doing my bachelor's, my department chair made everybody do Hamlet, including the women, and I thought he was crazy, and now I realize he was genius 30 years later. But when I went back to do my doctorate, I did my doctorate on Elizabethan culture, and I studied a specific family, and the family is the Careys, and the Careys were the patrons for both of the acting companies, the Lord Chamberlain's men and the Lord Admiral's men, who were the active companies performing these plays and other plays as well, Marlowe and Ben Johnson. So I was interested in the politics, and then when I moved back to Santa Fe after completing my doctorate, I stumbled by accident onto Robin's reading group. And after the second Sunday, I was like, how many more days on the calendar until it's Sunday again? because I was so taken with the ability to just spend time and figure out what it means. So I drank Robin's Kool-Aid. And then branched out from my original research into more research around Shakespeare in the text. So that's how I got here.
Robin Williams, what about you?
Oh, I was trying to remember how all that happened. When I was 17, a girlfriend and I drove up from Northern California up to Canada to camp for a month. And we stopped at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and, you know, stood in line and got some tickets. And so for the next 10 years, every year I drove myself up, even when I was once 8 months pregnant, camping, to see the plays. And I really don't remember anything about it except that I kept going back. And I hated Shakespeare in high school. And I didn't always understand what was going on, and I couldn't even put into words what made it interesting, but I kept going. And then I had all these kids, and time went by, and I would drag my kids to Shakespeare plays. And in 2002, one of my first editors said she had a Shakespeare reading group, and I said, So several of us got together, and the reading group at my house, we meet on the first Friday of each month, and we read an entire play out loud in one night.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
How long does that take? Does it take
4, 5, 6, 7 hours? So something like Richard
because
III.
Because you keep stopping.
Because discussion happens.
Well, it's some discussion. It's definitely not a close read because we don't have time. But there is some discussion because if you're not going to discuss it, you might as well read it at home by yourself. So since 2002, I've been doing that. But I've spent the last 25 years writing computer books. And a few years ago, about 6 or 7 years ago, so boring. And I could see this was not, you know, nobody buys computer books anymore. So I went and got myself a PhD, and the PhD was specifically in the history of reading and the future of reading Shakespeare out loud in community. So it gave me a lot more confidence in the power of people reading out loud and talking about it together. And what amazing things throughout history, when we have more reading groups, millions of people reading, we have more audience for the theater because it's not such a mystery to you anymore. So that's our focus too. It's what will set us aside from other Shakespeare centers, like the Oregon Shakespeare Festival just announced that they are rewriting the Shakespeare plays. Yes, they're not completely rewriting them, but changing words for others so that people can understand it, because apparently we're all too stupid. And our focus is, no, we're not going to change the text. We're going to make a huge outreach to get people familiar with the text before they come see the play. So it's going back to what history has shown us really works for getting people to the theater.
Now, you are having an event, I guess a fundraiser, on the 20th of November, which is a Friday. When and where is that? What will be happening?
That is from 5 to 6:30 at Elizabeth Thornton's house on Canyon and Delgado.
And if people want information on that, what should they do? They should, let me guess, go to internationalshakespeare.center.
Yes. Yes. And there's a link there that says, in the navigation bar, fundraising soiree.
Excellent. Anything else you want to leave people with before we go?
I think, just as a spoiler alert, we're very pleased and excited to announce that Mark Rylance, who you will have seen as the star of Wolf Hall on PBS and is currently in the Spielberg movie Bridge of Spies, and is, more importantly to us, the founding director for Shakespeare's Globe and London Theatre, has just agreed to be on our advisory board. And other people have stepped up and want to support us, including Robert Benedetti, who is a multiple Which awards has he won? Several awards.
Oh, Emmys, Peabody's, PhDs, Yale.
And also Rodney Cotier, who's the head of dramatic training at the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art, is also now on our advisory board. So this is a real endorsement and very encouraging to us as we're moving forward.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Carol Farkas, Robin Williams, and Kristen Bundesen of the International Shakespeare Center, once again on the web at internationalshakespeare.center. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.